West Virginia state trooper who went through one of the most horrific crimes you can imagine early in his career, and the murder of the wife of a sheriff, coming up on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Welcome to the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. In the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, we are joined by special guests talking about their experiences, their realities of investigating crimes, plus those who have experienced horrendous trauma. Police, first responders, military, and victims of crime share their stories. Hi, I'm John J. Wiley. In addition to being a broadcaster, I'm also a retired police sergeant. Be sure to check out our website, letradio.com, and also like us on Facebook. Search for the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Newsbreak is your number one local news app for current events, free live news for you and your community. Download the Newsbreak app today for free and be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Contact us from North Carolina. We have Oakley Dean Baldwin on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. First of all, thank you for your service, Oakley. Secondly, thanks for being guests on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Both very much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Now, do I call you Oakley, Dean, or Baldwin?
Your choice.
How about I'll call you Oakley? Does that work for you?
That works.
All right. Now, Oakley is also an author. He's written, I think, 27 books. The best way you can find them, just do a Google search for The Baldwin Stories. That's spelled B-A-L-D-W-I-N. Stories, and you'll get more information. Oakley, how long have you been retired from police work?
I retired in 2012 after 34 years of service.
Gotcha. You don't sound like an old man.
I feel like one.
I know sometimes it's that way, isn't it? I retired in 1992. Of course, I was very young. I got hurt and retired at the age of 33. And you were a West Virginia state trooper. We had lots of people in Baltimore that came from West Virginia. So there is some sort of similarity. And I feel like there's a kinship, so to speak.
Well, there you go. It's always a kinship when you wear the blue.
It is.
Or in my case, the green and gray.
Uh-huh. It very much is. And by the way, the West Virginia state police have a great reputation, and they're doing phenomenal things. What years did you serve?
I actually served West Virginia in 78 and 79 and moved to Raleigh, North Carolina, and finished out my career at the Wake County Sheriff's Department.
No kidding. See, I didn't know that about you. You left West Virginia and went to North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
How did you find a transition from being a state trooper to a sheriff's deputy?
It was pretty similar, actually. The West Virginia State Police weren't highway patrolmen. They were actually state police investigated all crimes. And when I got on with the sheriff's department, it was basically the same duties.
That's similar to Maryland. For people who don't know, you have areas where they do highway patrol stuff. And then you have full service barracks, where they assist local law enforcement, or they are the local law enforcement. So they handle everything from soup to nuts. And that's similar for the West Virginia State Police.
Correct.
Earlier in your career, you had an incident that is now known as Mayhem on the Mountain. Can you talk about that?
Yes, sir. I joined the state police in June of 78 and attended their 24-week academy. Graduated in November of 78. And my first duty station was in Wyoming County in a detachment called Jesse. And it wasn't very long before we had our first homicide that I was involved with. Unfortunately, there was a couple that had just gotten married the year before, and they were stayed in trouble. The older gentleman was 36 years old. His name was, and he married an 18-year-old girl named.
And just so you know, I don't believe in giving any kind of publicity to killers.
Okay. The dispatcher informed me that there was a hostage situation at the Mountain Motel.
And these were newlyweds. Is that what you were saying earlier?
Yes, sir. They had traveled around, couldn't find work. The gentleman was a heavy drinker. He could not stay employed. Then it wasn't long after they were married, they had their first child. And traveled around to Florida, to Wilmington, North Carolina. Actually walked all the way from Wilmington to Key Rock, West Virginia, because they didn't have any car or any money. Took them 3 weeks to do that, and they finally arrived at the gentleman's mother's home. and stayed out in the backyard in a shed. And it got really bad. They went over and stayed a few weeks with her mother and then got kicked out of there. And they took a taxi and wound up at the Mountain Motel. It's the only place they could stay. First couple of days, there wasn't any trouble at all. And then, he was drinking with the other guests and drinking pretty heavy. He had been in the military, too. And they say he went to Vietnam, so I'm sure he had some PTSD, which we didn't call it that back then. I think they called it shell shock and that kind of stuff back in the day when you and I were, full time.
And first of all, I got to go back. This is a person who walked from North Carolina to West Virginia. So you've got, in addition to all the issues that this person had with alcohol abuse and everything else, you got a sheer determination that right away, alarm bells started going in my head when I heard that part.
Yeah, and remember that he had a young wife and a young child with him too, and they would sleep in the woods. What happened was after a few days at the hotel, of course they drank up all their rent money and ran out of food money, and their Social Security checks didn't follow them because back then they used to deliver them in the mailbox, and they moved around so much they didn't have any money. So things were pretty dire for the couple. And about 6 o'clock on January the 30th, five construction young men were looking for a place to stay. They were working on a project down the street. This was the only hotel in Pineville. And they got room number 32, which was right across from room number 35, where these couple were staying. And the gentleman, drinking very heavily and no money, he's at the end of his rope. And he made the stupid decision that he was going to take some hostages inside the restaurant and demand several things. One was he was being investigated for child abuse with his child, of course. And that long walk from Wilmington to back to West Virginia was probably part of it.
Yeah, I would say that's a fair assessment, a fair guess.
Yes. And these construction workers watched the evening news. They, cleaned up, went downstairs to the restaurant, waited. It was a packed restaurant. They waited in line for service, and people started leaving. And once they got down to just these five men left in the hotel, pretty much the gentleman walked in. He had a gun in his hand. He fired a first shot down through the floor, but the round didn't go off, so he had to actually regroup and reload his pistol. And then he pointed his gun. Everybody yelled, "This is a stick-up, spread eagle on the floor." And, everybody was shocked. The waitress slipped back into the kitchen and got the kitchen staff out the back door. But he was holding five people hostage now, basically had them spread eagle on the floor.
And that's apparently when the police were called. We were talking with Oakley Dean Baldwin, and we're talking about Mayhem on the Mountain. And when he was with the West Virginia State Police, he's also an author now of many books, about 27. Just do a Google search for the Baldwin stories. We're going to take a short break. We'll return to the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show in a few moments. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Remember when news was free? Be sure to check out the Newsbreak app. It's free. And be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Newsbreak is your number one local news app for current events, free live news for you and your community. Download the Newsbreak app today for free. And be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. That's the free Newsbreak app. Be sure to look for and follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast. Start a conversation with Oakley Dean Baldwin on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. He is with the West Virginia State Police. He is also retired from Sheriff's Department in North Carolina, author of numerous books. When I say that, I think of the line from Anchorman. It got numerous Leatherman books. Do a Google search for the Baldwin stories and you'll find them. Before we end the break, we're talking about you were at home, you were with the West Virginia State Police, and you got a call to go to this Mountain restaurant hotel that turned into, there was a robbery that turned into a hostage situation. Was that frequent to be at home to get calls for service?
Yeah, back then we had to have our phone numbers published, and we would get calls after our work shift all the time. So I arrived at the scene around 8:30. We had two Wyoming County deputies had already gotten there and approached him, went inside, and he held his pistol to one of the hostages' head and told the deputies if they didn't leave, he would be executed. So they backed out and surrounded the building. More officers, of course, arrived. And then we had the building pretty much surrounded. There was officers from the Wyoming County Sheriff's Department, Oceana Police, Pineville Police, several different barracks and detachments from the state police.
And how long were you in the job when this call came out, when you got confronted with this?
I was on the job for about 3 months as a rookie.
Did anything prepare you for that kind of, we're going to talk about it, how it led into so much carnage, but did anything prepare you for that kind of tension and a high crime situation?
No, actually, this was pretty much a sleepy little area and low crime, so it was very disturbing. And it was an eight-hour siege, which in the freezing cold for 8 hours, and, you know, not being prepared for something like that, not dressed, you know, properly, it was pretty uncomfortable for the people inside, of course, but even the people, the officers outside.
It never ceases to amaze me. I tell my wife, I stopped wearing cologne because in Baltimore, it never failed. Summertime, it was a fire scene, it was something, it was a hostage situation. You're stuck outside for hours and hours and hours, and bees would get attracted to cologne. In the wintertime, it was always fires, and you were, no matter how well you dressed for it, between the water, the cold, all that stuff, you froze, and you were out there for literally hours on end. So I can kind of imagine what it was like for you all.
Yeah, and it happened to be snowing that night, and several inches of snow on the ground, and freezing temperatures, and your hands go numb, your feet go numb. No communication back then. We didn't have walkie-talkies or cell phones, so you had to do hand signals down the street. And with it snowing, it was pretty rough with trying to communicate with the other officers, finding out where you needed to be positioned. And then we had the traffic stop both ways. It was a main thoroughfare, and people were blowing the horns, they were getting out of their vehicles and approaching the hotel. It was sort of like, I tell people, it was herding a group of cats in a wide open field.
Yeah,
it was
really
rough.
I hated directing traffic. It was one of the worst jobs ever in police work. I want to go back to your story, the mayhem on the mountain. You got there, was it just a robbery hostage situation when you first got there?
When we were first arriving, we were told that it was a just a robbery. And then once we got there and realized that it was a hostage situation to get, you know, money and to get the welfare division off of their backs, the wife actually came down from their room and assisted with the husband in the actual hostage situation.
Wait, the wife assisted the husband, or was she called in by police to be kind of like a go-between?
No, actually, he was yelling for her to come down from the room to assist him, and they finally got in touch with her up in the room, and she actually came down and took one of the weapons and assisted him in the hostage situation while she was carrying this child in her arms.
That right there kind of defies all logic. You would think that this was probably an abusive situation. He was a heavy drinker. He had issues. He was armed. He held people hostage. And then she would use this as a first, and she had a young child and was pregnant with another one. You would think that logically that she'd be like, first chance I get, I'm leaving.
You would think so. But, you know, he was yelling. He was very anxious and suspicious of us throwing tear gas into the room. And she would go back and forth, look out the windows, report back to him, you know, where our positions were and that kind of thing.
This stuff is supposed to happen in Los Angeles, in New York, in Newark, New Jersey, in Baltimore, in Philadelphia. It doesn't happen in sleepy parts of West Virginia, does it?
It didn't back in the 70s.
Which leads me to my next question. That and this is something I tell people all the time. Yeah, you moved to a nice neighborhood. That's great. But that doesn't mean crime won't follow you. And by the way, criminals are mobile, even more so nowadays. So one of the things I had a problem with being a Baltimore City police, I used to think that the county guys had it easy. When I say guys, that means women, men and women. They didn't get a lot of calls. I didn't realize there's a lot less of them, number one. Their backup was a long ways away, and they had to handle everything from soup to nuts. In some ways, they got exposed to just as much as we did because they didn't get, there's no backup. There's no relief.
Oh, yeah, I was one of four troopers for the entire county, and you never had backup. You had to depend on your skill set.
How important was that when you made the decision to move to North Carolina?
Well, I thought it would be better as far as backup here, but when I became a deputy, we have 856 square miles in this county, and we only had four deputies on patrol at one time, so you had a quarter of the county. So it actually didn't improve. I thought it might, but it didn't.
So when you get a car stop, it goes south, you're by yourself, help is 20, 30 minutes away?
Yeah, that's probably a good estimate, 20 minutes.
And by the way, 2 minutes, 20 seconds can feel like an eternity when you're in a brawl. When you're in a life and death fight, for me, it seemed like a very long time. I want to go back to your story, though. What's got me intrigued about this, Oakley, is that you were young police. And how old were you when this occurred?
I think I was still 21.
Yeah, so it was relatively young, and you had a lot of serious experienced old-timers there, but I don't think anybody could predict what happened. So this turned from a robbery into a hostage situation. His wife got involved. She was checking windows to make sure police weren't throwing in tear gas, all that stuff, and it didn't end there, did it?
No, that was just the beginning of it. He started shooting at that point. He was real frustrated because we couldn't get the welfare workers into the kitchen area where he was holding the hostage, which we weren't going to allow her to go in there anyway. We were afraid for her safety. And he started shooting up through the ceiling, and he started shooting through the walls. And he would occasionally, while the hostages were laying face down on the floor, if they looked up at him, he would shoot a pot or a pan or a glass bottle near their head to scare them. And it was very surreal, and these men were all in danger.
And nothing prepared them for this. They were just, you said, construction workers that hey, let's go get something to eat?
That's how it happened.
So when he started shooting, how many people were shot?
Well, he ended up, what happened was the decision was made at one point to turn off the lights, and they were going to try to break the door in and go in and get him. And when the lights went out, he said, "If anyone moves, I'll shoot you." And he thought he saw some movement. He ended up shooting one of the hostages in the back. And then everyone started screaming, and then the lights came back on. And unfortunately, the shot hit him in the lung area in the back, and he was coughing up blood and bleeding pretty heavy.
We're taking a short break. We're talking with Oakley Dean Baldwin. He is a retired sheriff's deputy. We're talking about mayhem on the mountain. A hostage situation turned into a murder. When he's a rookie with the Virginia State Police, and we got so much more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, and be sure to click like. Starting a conversation with Oakley Dean Baldwin, which, by the way, sounds like a very Hollywood-style name. He was a West Virginia State Trooper and retired from a Sheriff's Department in North Carolina, author of, I think, 27 books. You can find him easily. Just do a Google search for The Baldwin Stories. It's spelled B-A-L-D-W-I-N Stories, and you'll find them. You'll get more information. We're talking about Mayhem on the Mountain. It's got a great name. I'll be honest with you, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that it hasn't been made into a what we used to call a made-for-TV movie, because it's got a great name.
It sure does. At one point, the parents, or the mother and brother of this gentleman, was called to the scene by the Wyoming County Sheriff and to try to de-escalate the situation. And he ended up shooting at his own mother through the wall.
Wow.
So he was pretty distraught at that time. The one that was shot in the back was dying on the floor, and he made a statement similar to, Well, they can only kill me once for, you know, so it doesn't really matter how many I kill of y'all. So I'm just going to go ahead and kill all of you here. Let me get a cigarette first. So he went for a cigarette and didn't have any and told his wife to go out to the machine to get a cigarette. And she didn't have any change. So one of the hostages was a quick thinker. He said, I have change in my pocket. And they had been tied together with boot strings. So this gentleman untied him long enough. He got up on his knees and he reached in his pocket. And as he pulled his change out, he purposely dropped it and had it roll across the floor. And the hostage taker bent down to pick up the change, and this one hostage jumped up off the floor since his hands were untied and started scuffling and fighting with the suspect.
And I think I can't say I blame him. One of the things that I say all the time, and look, I'm not a great fighter. I know that, but I'm not going to voluntarily. If someone tells me they're going to kill me, they act like they're going to kill me, I'm going to fight every chance I get. I'm going to fight back. And my wife and my daughters, my sisters, they all know this. If we say this, if you're going to kill me, you kill me here. I'm not getting your car. I'm not going to be taken elsewhere, because that almost always ends badly.
I agree. And that's good advice for your family.
Yeah, it is. You got, when your life is on the line, fight. What's the old saying? Fight like the third monkey on the ramp at Noah's Ark when it's starting to rain. I mean, really, when it's life or death, you got to fight.
And that's exactly what these men did. Second man jumped up, grabbed suspect, and they were going around in circles, and he was yelling for his wife to shoot him because she had a gun on him too. And she took a shot, hit one of the hostages in the shoulder, and a third hostage jumped up at that point, and he also was charging, and he was shot in the shoulder and jumped on the wife, knocking a table over on her with the child in her arms. And they were yelling for us to come in at that time. But from my perspective, that all I could see was shots fired. I could hear them. I could see the lights flashing like lightning in the windows, you know, but I couldn't tell what was going on. I just knew it had really hit the fan at that point.
Yeah, it did. And you would think that people would say, enough of this, we got to go, and we got to do this. There's a chain of command, which is very important, but the longer these things go, can it become numbing, especially you got cold weather, you got snow, you got all that stuff going on, and it's like, let's wait these people out and see if we can get some peaceful resolution to this.
Yeah, that's what we're trained to do, to put that time in there, but time was against us on this one, being in a kitchen. They had all the food they wanted, beer, cigarettes at one point, till they smoked all the cigarettes. This is the only time I can ever tell you that smoking a cigarette was actually a good thing.
Right.
And we had, what really sticks with me is when he's yelling, if these pigs rush us, you know, I'll shoot these guys here and then I'll shoot myself. He yells at his wife to shoot the baby and then shoot yourself. Can you handle it? And she's yelling, yes, I can. Yes, I can. You know, so they had to be at the end of their rope or have some type of, mental disturbance.
Well, that's a nice way of putting it. Look, if someone said that to me and I'm witnessing that, I'll be honest with you, Oakley, I don't know what I would do.
I think you said it best. You're gonna fight like the third monkey trying to get on the ark.
Yeah, and it's brother, it's starting to rain. How did you and the police there resolve this?
Once they jumped the two suspects, the back door was basically broken open with some large crowbars, and a flood of troopers ran in and subdued put the suspects in custody. Unfortunately, the one gentleman died on the floor of the kitchen, and then they were taken to the hospital. One suspect was beat up pretty bad by the hostage takers, and he had to receive stitches and that kind of thing at the hospital. They were both lodged into the Wyoming County Jail and charged with homicide.
And the end result, were they convicted?
The end result was the man was convicted, and he's still in prison. He actually went to Moundsville Prison, which is the dreaded West Virginia State Prison. until it closed, and then they moved him to another one. And the female went to prison for a short time. She was released. And unfortunately, in 2007, she had an argument with her daughter that she was actually carrying in that store. And she shot and killed her daughter, and then shot and killed herself.
Wow. There's no upside to this story at all. Were you at least, can I say that being 21, being relatively new in the job, that you didn't take a lot of negative impact emotionally from this, or did you?
No, I really couldn't understand what was happening at the time. But as I've gotten older, you know, I realized life is not fair sometimes, and being in the wrong place at the wrong time is what's happened to these men.
There's no rhyme or reason to a lot of this stuff, Oakley. You said it really, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Literally, and I used to tell people this, we watch these things on television, and I keep bringing them because we're talking about something that's very TV related in a moment. But we talk about, you know, the criminal geniuses and the masterminds and all that. We got to worry about them. And it's the loser down the street that can totally ruin your life and take your life. And that's the thing, I didn't want to tell my family. I didn't want my wife at the time to know.
Yeah, I get it. And it is sometimes just a guy down on his luck, and he doesn't see any way out. And then he does something stupid, or they drinks too much and then makes the wrong decision.
I listen to you talk about this, and I don't get the feeling, and I don't want to refer to this, that you have some degree of compassion for this guy, but you seem to have a sense of understanding that most would not have.
Yeah, I think because he was in the military and he went to Vietnam, and I do believe he had PTSD issues, and that's why he was trying to medicate himself with abusing alcohol, and I think it just went downhill from there. He was divorced one time before he married this lady and had some other children. He had some issues with having custody and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I always try to look at all the ins and outs of a story and try to get a perspective when I tell it. And it's you know, obviously he did the wrong thing, but I can see what led up to a lot of it.
We're talking about Oakley Dean Baldwin. He was a West Virginia State Trooper and went to North Carolina, and he's retired from the Sheriff's Department there. He's author of multiple books. I believe he's 27. Best way you can find him, go to do a Google search for The Baldwin Stories. It's BALDWIN Stories, and you will find him. Follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. It's free. And get the latest crime and law enforcement news on the Newsbreak app. It's simple, easy, and free. Just download the Newsbreak app. Then search for and follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. When we return to the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, we're going to talk about walking tall. And, well, stick around. You'll find out. One of your top destinations on the internet should be letradioshow.com. You'll find every episode of the show as a free podcast after airing on radio. You'll also find great blog articles, op-ed articles, and much more, all at letradioshow.com. Concerning a conversation on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show with Oakley Dean Baldwin. He was a West Virginia State Trooper. He moved to North Carolina, became a sheriff's deputy, and then retired from there. Author of numerous books. You do a Google search for The Baldwin Stories. That's BALDWIN, and you will find them. One of the things, when Oakley first contacted me, and he brought up a story that I'm familiar with, I watched as a kid, and it's been a long time. Sheriff Buford T. Pusser from Tennessee, and the movie's Walking Tall. He was quite the famous crime-fighting figure, and his wife was Pauline Mullins Pusser, and she was a distant relative of yours. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Now, did you know her back then, or was that before your time?
Yeah, it was a little bit before my time. I found out about her probably in the 80s, maybe, and being a distant relative, and got wondering about her, you know, her murder and that kind of thing, because it was never solved back in the day, and she was murdered August the 12th of 1967.
Now, if my memory is correct, I watched the movies a long time. I got to watch them again. And they've been made several times. He was famous for carrying a big, like, axe handle and fighting corruption in the part of Tennessee where he was a sheriff. Am I wrong?
No, that's what they made it look like in the movies. He actually did have an axe handle to break moonshine steals, which he broke many. I think they even got 28 in 1 year. So he was putting moonshiners out of business, but he never really carried it the way they portray it on the movies.
And was he riding in a car with his wife, Pauline, and they were ambushed?
Right. I started researching this story in 2019 and 2020 during COVID. I had a lot of time to research it, to write a book on it. And I wanted to get to the nuts and bolts and find out what really happened. And I kept running into a lot of questions more than answers with the crime scene, the route that they took. But this story was told by the sheriff was he received a call early in the morning as he got home from his night shift, probably between 2 and 3 o'clock, and put his uniform back on. Pauline said she wanted to go with him, which raises a red flag with me. Why would you want your wife to go on a disturbance?
Yeah, that wouldn't happen. That would not happen. And nowadays it wouldn't happen.
Correct. And, you know, back in our day, you might have your spouse ride along on a Sunday afternoon, but you would drop her off somewhere if you were going to a hot call. I mean, that just wouldn't happen. So that was a red flag for me. The route he took was wrong. He went the back roads instead of going the highway to the tavern where the disturbance call was from. And then the actual crime scene, he told two or three different stories about what happened at the crime scene, which was disturbing to me, because normally, now I can see you get things wrong, but you don't tell different stories.
Right, right. And it's very similar every time you get asked that, because the facts don't change.
So they left the house between about 2:30. Well, the ambush happened at around 4:30 or 4:45 a.m., and the ride to the club should only been 20 minutes, so you have a couple hours of lost time there, even through his story. And his story was they both got shot sitting in the vehicle, but the crime scene photos that I looked at have blood splatter all on the outside of the hood, tracing back towards the windshield, which appears to me that someone was shot outside of the car near the front headlight, and the blood splattered back on the hood. So I started digging a little deeper, and then we realized that Pauline had never had an autopsy. And the year before, Sheriff Buford Pusser shot and killed a woman named Hathcock in her nightclub, and they did an autopsy on her. So they were doing autopsies in McNairy County even before Pauline was murdered.
It would strike me nowadays, you know, if there's any unexpected death and unattended death and is not medically supervised by a doctor, there's almost always an autopsy. Was that the case always in that part of Tennessee?
Yeah, I think any homicide or any death by motor vehicle, they would do an autopsy.
Right. And the fact that they didn't do an autopsy on Pauline Mullins Pusser is very alarming.
It's very alarming, especially to law enforcement officers. And here's another thing. In January of that same year, the sheriff tells a story of he stopped a car and two men shot at him, and he received a flesh wound in the left cheek area. There's a famous picture of him sitting in his hospital bed with his wife, Pauline, beside him. And then 6 months later, she's murdered. She's shot in the head with a 30 caliber, they think it may have been a carbine rifle, and he receives a wound in the exact same area on his cheek. And on either one of these shootings, there was no witnesses. There's never been anybody arrested. So that came up as another really big red flag for me. In a small county of McNairy County, I think at the time he may have had four deputies.
The murder of Pauline Mullins Pusser has been reopened.
Yes, what happened was, I know About 3 months ago, I received a call from a TBI agent, and he was reading my book, and he said, I wanted to know that I'm enjoying your book, and I have some of the very same questions that you have. And I want to let you know that we've reopened this homicide cold case, and he asked me to do some digging for him, and he asked me to do a couple of things, which I complied with his requests to move this process forward. And on February the 8th, he got permission, and they exhumed Pauline's body for an autopsy.
Look, they don't have to tell us anything, but did you hear anything about the results of that autopsy?
No, they have performed the autopsy, and they are waiting for pathology reports to come back. Sometimes it takes a while, but I'm sure that they've gone over this with a fine-tooth comb. And I believe it's going to be a good autopsy because when they raised her coffin, it was sealed, and that coffin was actually sealed in a concrete vault. And it was dry when they brought it up. It wasn't wet. So they should have a very good autopsy result.
Please, Oakley, let us know the status of that when you find out more. I'm very, very curious for a lot of reasons which you'd understand. And I'm not a homicide detective. I did my fair share of investigating murders, but that was not my job. But there's a lot of things about this that are very, very alarming. I'll just say that. You've decided to write books. How many books have you written?
We have 27 books out now. My wife and I are co-authors, and we have this. The Buford book is called Murder of Mrs. Buford Pusser, of course, by Oakley Dean Baldwin. And we have a lot of thrillers, true crime, family mysteries, pretty much everything but romance.
Pretty much. Well, you've got a pretty wide variety of books. You said there's 27 of them?
Yes.
What is your favorite style to write? Is it fiction? Is it fact? Is it true crime or what? Or combination?
I think I like the thrillers, family thrillers. I had a lot of heathens in my family, moonshiners back in the day. I'm pretty much the black sheep of the family. I went into law enforcement. True crime stories I enjoy the most.
We always had an old saying that there was a fine line that divided police from the criminals. And sometimes you'd have some, which is a very, very small percentage. But funny thing is, it's all people seem to focus on that would cross over and do corrupt things. I don't know of anybody that did that. Did you?
No. I tell you what, though, with the story with Sheriff Buford Pusser, you know, he actually enlisted a lot of people into law enforcement because of the Walking Tall movies. One part of me, I have a lot of questions. Another part, if the autopsy results come back showing that Pauline was murdered before she was shot in the head, it'll be a sad day for law enforcement.
It will.
For the family and the community.
And I'm really hoping that's not the case. I really, really am. Oakley, I want to thank you for your service. Again, thanks for telling a story. And please, do not be a stranger. Tell us updates of what happens here on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show.
Well, I sure will. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our guests for coming on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. The Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show is a nationally syndicated weekly radio show broadcast on numerous AM and FM radio stations across the country. We're always adding more affiliate stations. If you enjoyed the podcast version of the show, which is always free, please do me a favor and tell a friend or two or three. I'll be back in just a few days with another episode of the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast. Until then, this is John J. Wiley. See ya.